Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, I think I even said it once when you were on the cruise that we cited a poll for one of the martinis, and it just seemed like it was too soon to talk about polls again. And it probably was, and it probably still is. But a new survey out from Gallup should be a shot in the arm for conservatives in particular, and also some Republicans who shall remain nameless for the moment up on Capitol Hill, who are feeling the pressure that just because the president narrowly won re-election means all of a sudden America is wholeheartedly behind his agenda. Not so, specifically on the issue of health care. To no one's surprise, it looks like people are still just as much opposed to the president's health care plan as always. But this Gallup poll specifically talks about the overarching issue. Do you think it is the responsibility of the federal government to make sure all Americans have health care coverage, or is that not the responsibility of the federal government? Now, back for most of the decade of the 2000s, those who thought it was the government's responsibility had a huge advantage. In 2006, they had a 41-point lead. As soon as the Obamacare debate started, it became pretty much neck and neck, with not the government's responsibility holding a slight edge, probably within the margin of error. Now it's a 10-point edge for not the government's responsibility. So just because a big government president's got four more years on the job doesn't mean America is ready to embrace that. They're looking for a smaller government role, particularly on this key issue, and hopefully Republicans are taking notice.
You know, Greg, this is a genuinely good martini with a slightly bitter aftertaste, because I'd like to ask those 54% of Gallup respondents, where were you earlier this month? There really wasn't any dispute about how Mitt Romney felt about Obamacare and the government, federal government's role in regulating the health insurance market and forcing people to buy health insurance and all that. And there really wasn't any dispute about how Barack Obama felt about it. So clearly some percentage of that 54% voted for Barack Obama, which is just mind-boggling. Good to know that we still have public attitudes on this that we can work with. We can make the argument and reinforce the argument that this is a bad idea. One of the things that may be kind of a broad-based bit of good news for folks on the right in the coming year, in a way, a presidential campaign may not be the best circumstance to make a decision. Because if you think about it, you're seeing this with a great deal of flowery language from the candidates and the excitement and grandiose rallies and people chanting people's names and being swept up in this emotional wave, you could say. And then you actually get to live with the policies. And lo and behold, surprise, surprise, some of these policies don't look so appealing in the cold, hard light of day after the party. The inaugural party is over and the hangover kicks in. Every president, and particularly in their second term, deals with the factor of buyer's remorse. And the interesting thing is that the administration, you know, Obama is more popular than his policies. People don't like the stimulus. They think stimulus failed. They think that Obamacare is a disaster. As Obamacare gets more implemented, and as we see, you know, however this the fiscal cliff issue gets resolved, and as, you know, it looks like one way or another, probably some sort of tax hikes are going to kick in. People might be saying, oh, wait a minute, what did we vote for? What did we just, you know, sign up for four more years of? So it's one of those things where you know, it's extremely frustrating that these sentiments and these attitudes couldn't play a bigger factor in the presidential race. But if nothing else, it's good to know that the public, if you think you didn't like the idea of the federal role in healthcare, in health insurance before America, just wait for the coming years. Just wait for the coming years.
Yeah, a couple of points I would make. I don't have a lot of sympathy for those people who are now shocked, like Susan Essrich, we talked about a couple of days ago, or people about this. I mean, if you were blindsided by Barack Obama after 2008, I can understand that. He promised a lot of things and then did exactly the opposite. You knew what he wanted to do, and if you voted for him this time, the only person you have to blame is the one looking back at you in the mirror. So you should have gotten it right a few weeks ago. Too late to gripe about it now. The other thing I would say is, then this is not the only reason that Romney lost, clearly, but I think there's a lot of people, perhaps even some in his own campaign, who didn't target this issue as much as another nominee could. We talked about one of Romney's, certainly his liability in the primary was his health care plan in Massachusetts, and I think a lot of people thought that by going after Obamacare, it's just going to draw a ton of rebuttals related to his own plan. Whether that would have happened or not, I don't know, but I think that took some of the steam out of the issue for the Republicans in 2012.
Fair point, and it's worth noting that there's, you know, we can have The good news is that we can be the 110% opposed to Obamacare party in the years to come, as opposed to having this nuanced, mostly opposed, but it's okay for the states, and you know this muddle that the Romney position may have turned out to be more than we had hoped heading into this election.
Yeah. On to martini number two now. And we alerted with breaking news in yesterday's three martini lunch about how Susan Rice's trip to assuage the concerns of Senators Graham, McCain, and Ayotte did not go well. They came out with public statements saying that they were more concerned than ever about what Susan Rice had to say on those Sunday morning chat shows and what the truth really is about Benghazi. Later in the day, there was even more clarification because apparently at that same meeting, Rice was accompanied by the new acting director of the CIA who said that it was the FBI who changed the intelligence report before it got to Susan Rice. Then we found out later in the day it was actually the CIA. So 10 weeks later, maybe even 11 weeks later, whatever we are now, Jim, they still don't have the story straight.
Yeah. Over on BuzzFeed, they have a thing of, you know, the administration has offered five different explanations as to why the description of what happened in Benghazi changed as it went along the line. This little detail just kind of stands out. The director of the CIA, who, obviously the acting director, stepped in for Petraeus. You'd like to think, if no other aspect of this story, he would know what his agency had done. And this is not some guy they picked up off the street. This guy's been, you know,
right.
Petraeus' deputy throughout this entire time. Goes out, is talking to senators. You'd like to think he'd have his facts straight before he goes to this fairly important meeting. You know, the senators are pretty darn irate about Benghazi. Tells them the information. Says it's really the FBI's fault. Leaves. And then he goes, never mind. It's an Emily Letella moment from the acting CIA director. Not reassuring, kind of indicates in light of this, everything else he said during that has to be, thrown into doubt. I have a feeling that if and when there are additional public hearings on this, we're going to hear a lot of, are you sure, type questioning from Republican lawmakers, because it now turns out that what you're told can very much turn out to be totally not the case, which is the scandal in a nutshell. Administration going out and telling the American public things that just flat out aren't true, that it was driven by a movie protest. They now say there was no movie protest. The Mortar Fire was just an outgrowth of that film critic review set of circumstances. And we've come to expect administration figures to be lying. To have the CIA director coming out and botching basic facts in his discussions with senators is unnerving and kind of suggests that we really are the gang that can't shoot straight.
I hearken back to what Charles Krauthammer said a few weeks after Benghazi. Just tell the truth. It's so much easier to remember.
Yeah.
So we'll see if the truth does fully come out. On to martini number three now. And Jim, you may remember when the Tea Party came out, the mainstream media, you talked about how they're radical. These people are wearing, Lipton tea bags off their hats at these rallies. They're holding signs that say, end the Fed. I mean, these people are insane. Some of them actually own firearms, in fact. And then, of course, the media coddled Occupy Wall Street. But the liberal protester, despite pooping on police cars and, rape camps and all sorts of other things at the Occupy sites, apparently are taking it to a new level. A group of folks, some affiliated with an outfit known as Queerocracy, showed up at not the Speaker's office of John Boehner, but at his regular congressional office, where he never is, decided to strip down. I believe it was four men and three women, and then chant vulgar slogans about why it's imperative that he not cut health care funding specifically related to HIV/AIDS. So if we're looking for the adults in the room, I'm pretty sure more of them are on our side.
Greg, would it be fair to say that this anti-spending cut movement is sagging? It's the most common observation in response to this development yesterday is, why is it the people who are protesting naked never the people you want to see protesting naked? It's, I suppose removing their clothes really is a strong motivator to give them what they want, and maybe they'll put their clothes back on again or something. One of the things I've always kind of been fascinated by is you see this, you saw Code Pink, you see the people who disrupt hearings in Capitol Hill. None of those things ever really seem to do anything. I've never seen anyone change their mind based on some, naked, ugly protester or people, glitter bombing or any of these other, kind of temper tantrum manners of expressing themselves. And yet people do it. And I think what it kind of says is to groups like this, it's not really about persuasion. It's not really about changing minds, despite everything they say. It really is about self-expression. This is performance art. It is appallingly unattractive performance art. And the thing is that, look, we have public spaces for that. There's no need to do this on Capitol Hill. If you really feel the need to get naked, please do it very, very far from my eyes, your eyes, and most of our eyes. And we can, there's probably some nudist camp that we can put all these protesters and let them frolic in their frigid cold and shout their slogans while doing so. Because clearly this is the only way they feel they can express themselves in this constitutional republic.
Plus, if Boehner's got any unstamped out cigarette butts lying around, you could hurt yourself. Be careful.
Yeah, exactly. Careful. It's a dangerous, dangerous environment to be running around naked. Just say, this is where I could, in the Clinton era, you could insert certain jokes there. Bob Packwood, there's plenty of don't run around naked around a politician jokes there. But I'll just let that one lie, which is kind of what I wish the nude protesters had done with their clothes. Just leave them where they are.
Exactly. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.